Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference presented by Louise Thorpe, head of academic innovation at Sheffield Hallam University. The session is entitled Meeting or Managing, Responding to Student Expectations for Policy and Practice.
So start to give them some additional information so that by the time they actually arrive at the university, they're more equipped to address that expectation. Sorry, say your question. Okay, so the question there was, we've been trying to meet the students' expectations since 2003. Have we got any evidence that the students are doing better at the university since 2003? No. I think it's going to be the right answer, isn't it? I think it's hard to make a direct correlation. What we tend to... what we feel is that the use of the technology, when used appropriately, can make the learning experience more engaging. So if the student experience is more engaging, certainly that has a positive impact on retention, and we have specific examples of that where we had modules or courses that had high dropout rates that they've been addressed. And also, if things are more engaging and you're more engaged in your learning experience, the end product of that is that you should do better. Whether you can just say it's only that one thing that's made you do better, I don't feel you can do that. I think there are lots of different initiatives, lots of activities, lots of curriculum design that are all contributing to additional performance. But certainly in terms of the flexibility of access, making it easy for you to stay on the course, controlling your own learning, being able to see what your progress is and how you're doing on that course, and then just having that information available to you, those learning experiences that are more interesting or more authentic, makes a difference in terms of that experience, I would say. Okay. Got time for one. Any more questions? Got time for one more? Okay, so the question there was, have we considered doing a faculty expectations of e-learning? And the answer there is yes, we have considered it, and then considered it some more. At the moment, our priority is going to be around faculty's experiences of e-learning. The Digital Fluency Initiative that I mentioned there is for staff and for students. So it's really about how do you feel about your professional role within the world of technology? What kind of development opportunities are you looking for? Where do you see benefits? Where do you see the problems? So at the moment, because we have so many faculty who are actually using e-learning, we're focusing on their experiences of it. And that's underway at the moment. We started it in about February of this year, February 08, and it will continue through to the summer of 09. And then hopefully we'll have some information to share. Up until then, really, we took a very case study based approach to faculty experiences. Tell us what you're doing, tell us what you're finding easy or difficult, whereas now we're really looking at their professional identity and their personal experiences and confidence. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. And it had a very central mission, which was to change the culture of learning and teaching, because that's not hard to do at all, is it? I mean, everybody can just click your fingers and the culture's changed and everybody thinks differently. But it was about making appropriate use of technology in the learning experience. But it was also very much about integrating learning technologies into the campus. So we are predominantly on-campus students, face-to-face, and it was about that blend. So it wasn't about building a huge distance learning programme. It was about using it everywhere. And it seems strange, I think, in 2008 to think that that would be a difficult thing to think about. But in 2001, it certainly was. It was still do we really need to do this? Isn't it going to go away quite soon? You know, so that was the challenge. The project itself had four main strands. The first one is the one that I'm probably the most committed to, which was about raising awareness of and the engagement with the benefits of e-learning. So what technology enables you to do, regardless of the technology that you use or regardless of the mission that you're trying to achieve, actually thinking about what happens in student learning. We implemented an institution-wide VLE. We used Blackboard, Blackboard Classic, I think sometimes it's now called, and we also had a staff development programme. But very importantly, that final bullet point, we wanted to do some research into students' expectations and students' experiences of e-learning. So we wanted to inform what we were doing from the feedback that we were getting from students and to factor that in rather than just kind of go head on without ever sort of pausing to ask. I'm not going to talk about the individual bits of the student feedback that we engaged in, but if anybody wants to ask any questions towards the end, we did a large e-learning research project about their experiences, which involved them keeping diaries, recording what they were doing. We did some observational research, some interview plus studies, and we got the faculty to develop case studies of good practice. So there was all of that going on as well. But alongside it, we decided to start gathering student expectations. We started in 2003, so we've now got 5 years' worth of data. I'll talk a little bit about whether that's a good or a bad thing in a minute. And we're now doing an additional research project. So why were expectations important to us then? Can I just ask, how many people in the room now do some sort of expectations survey or gather some sort of feedback from their current students about what's happening? Can you just raise, show hands? Okay. So I don't really need to do this slide at all because everyone knows why it's important. We were really very conscious of an expectation gap that was emerging, particularly I think early on in 2003, 2004, where we had a feeling, we weren't sure, we had a feeling that students were expecting something when they came into the university, but we weren't necessarily sure what that was. And that there was, students were struggling to make a transition because it is quite a different experience generally from school to university. And then if they were also expecting technology to be used differently, that added an extra layer to it. We also were very concerned that we could use that to inform what we were doing. So if we know what students expect, then surely we can design some policies or practices that reflect that and respond to that. And we could also help faculty to engage in that process. So we were hoping that we would find out some information about what students expect. People would be able to factor that into their curriculum design. The challenges, the bits that were hard were, what do we actually want to know? So we already did, or our IT department already did things like, do you own a laptop or do you own a mobile phone and what technology are you coming in with in terms of hardware? So we thought, well, we don't really want to know that. We didn't want to have a really big survey that asked lots and lots of demographic information. We were trying to get to the heart of the experience. The bit that was difficult, and we had lots of debate about this within our own institution, is that by asking the question, you raise people's expectations. So as soon as we said to a student in the student survey, do you expect there to be podcasting, for example, then suddenly they'll all expect there to be podcasting because we've planted that seed in their heads. And if academic staff weren't choosing to use that particular technology, we'd raised an expectation that we then couldn't meet. And again, really early on, that was quite a challenge for us to be able to ask questions and push out the boundaries and push the envelope of where they want to be without staff then feeling that we were pressuring them into making changes that they weren't ready for. So that was quite a challenge. Is knowing enough? Once you know what they expect, what on earth are you going to do with it? And the question really was, are we trying to meet their expectations? So if they ask for, you know, everything to be in a virtual world, do we go, right, we'll put everything in a virtual world then? Or are we trying to manage their expectations and say, this is what you can expect within the institution? And of course, you know, the answer for us really was somewhere between the two. It always is. And it's a little bit of this and a little bit. So that's what we did. So basically, the survey that we used at that stage from 2003 to 2008, ask them what they were doing on campus, ask them what amount of time they were spending on campus, what amount of time they were spending learning off campus, and what kinds of activities they were doing in those different areas. But then also, what online activities they expected to be essential to their learning. So not what might you come across, but what will actually be embedded within your curriculum, what are the things that you can't live without. And that was quite important to us, really, because we wanted to get a feel for... We didn't want them just to tick everything. You know, oh, yes, I'll have one of everything, please. And then we didn't really have the data that we needed. We wanted to know what was at the core of what they were expecting. This is the just the response rate, the number of people that actually responded to the surveys in the different years. Started off high, we had a little dip in 05, 06, and 06, 07. No idea why. Back up again in 07, 08. But it's a nice taster. The survey went through our student portal and it went up induction week, so the week before teaching starts, and then the first week of teaching. So for incoming students, students who were new to the university, they had no preconception of what was going to be happening. They were still just literally joining, signing up and saying what they thought. For the returning students who were also part of the survey, obviously they'd had a year or 2 years, some of them had been away on work study and then returning, and they were then saying what they expected based upon their experiences that they'd had so far. The challenges really, I think, for us in the study were getting good longitudinal data. The questions that you ask in 2003 aren't the questions that you would ask in 2008, and it's quite interesting how you deal with that, I think. Some things are fine. You know, you can still ask them about email. You could ask them about email in 2003, you could ask them about email in 2008. We weren't asking about virtual worlds, we weren't even asking about blogs and wikis, which feel like they've been around forever now, you know. So that was quite hard, actually. And I think, while I'll talk a little bit about the trend data, on reflection, I really don't think it was that important. It's always nice from a research perspective to say I've got 5 years' worth of data and I can talk about the trends. But in reality, the information that we were best able to use in the institution was the current year's data. The students who are here now, what are you going to do with that information? So that was interesting. And then also comparing the incoming students with those students who were returning to the university. If expectations are lower for the returning students, does that mean to say that they have more realistic expectations, or have they had the joy of the experience beaten out of them during the course of the process, and so it's not quite as exciting as they thought it was going to be? We weren't really sure how to interpret some of that information. What we found, some things haven't changed over the 5 years. This is a very potted version, I know, but expectations were high to start with, and they stay high. So students expect there to be technology. That's a no-brainer, I think, for probably the people in this room, but it's still a revelation when we're working across campus. Working and commuting students assigned the greatest amount of value to the use of technology. So those students who needed the flexibility got the most benefit out of it. They all saw it as an essential feature of preparing them for work. It was very much about an employability skill, an employment opportunity. I think often as well tied in with the mature students who were returning to study, they saw it as an induction process into modern working practices. Lots and lots of students are very confident with the technology, but with a caution. There's still a big enough group of students who really aren't confident with the technology that you can't forget about. So on the one hand, it's very easy to get sort of sucked into the idea that they're all coming in, they're all really confident, everybody knows what they're doing, all we've got to do is make it happen. But there are still a significant minority for us who feel that that's not their experience, and they feel slightly overwhelmed by the experience of what's happening. And then there were essential baselines. Electronic resources was obvious. We should be using lots of websites, lots of good quality electronic journals. Using email to communicate with academic staff is still very, very popular. We don't seem to have the trend that I'm seeing in the US that people are talking about here, about students wanting IM or different sort of communication tools. Email's still the way you communicate with your tutor. That's still what was expected for them. And blended activity. I don't mind doing things online, but I expect some face-to-face time. And I don't want you to cut my face-to-face time in order to give me online time. I'm here for a campus experience. So those are constants. What has changed is in 2003, we sort of said, do you expect this to be in your learning experience? Yes, no, don't know. Huge don't knows. Probably nearly half the students on lots of the questions didn't know whether it was going to be there or not. They had no kind of preconceptions of that. 2007, it's about 10 to 15% say they don't know. So it's really changed. They've got very firm opinions, and it goes both ways. So some of them, yes, definitely. Some of them, no, definitely. But they've certainly got the definitely bit sorted out. Greater use role of technology in assessment. This is really big for us. So in 2003, it was about 48% expected some form of summative assessment to be online. In 2007-2008, 63.5%. In 2007, nearly 83% expect to be able to get feedback online. Now, that's one of the questions that we didn't ask in 2003 because it was just something that we wouldn't have been configured to be able to do even if we'd wanted to. But now it's quite a large project for us. And when we asked, when we drilled this down, the student feedback suggested that they were more confident about the robustness of the technology. So the thing in 2003 was, don't assess me using it because it might fall over, it's a bit flaky, it's going to be problematic. By the time it got to 2007, their sense was that technology is secure enough and robust enough to be able to be used for assessment. The newer technologies have the most rapid growth. So, interestingly, over half the students felt that they want to do some kind of online collaboration and reflection, like blogs and wikis. They expected that to be an essential feature of their learning experience. This was particularly interesting, I think, for us, because we asked them about their previous use of things like this. 10% of them had ever used a blog before, and 2% of them had ever used a wiki before. But half of them thought it was going to be part of their higher education experience. So it wasn't something that they were bringing with them. It was something that they anticipated would be open to them when they got into higher education. And then lots more media. And again, I think that's just to do with bandwidth and access and the way the technology is able to work. So they were the things that we discovered, very potted. I can talk a lot more about that, but don't want to get into that detail. What we've done with it is, we have tried to use that data to inform our strategy and particularly the guiding principles that we use to promote e-learning within the university. We've used the data on an e-learning course that we ran for senior managers. Some of you may be familiar with that. We talked about this before and we talked about it last night at the poster session, but I'll mention that briefly. It initiated projects. It identified areas of work for us for the next 3 to 4 years. And also it's provided us with information for staff development. If I say something's a good idea, some members of staff will do it. If I say a student thinks something's a good idea, more members of staff will do it. You know, it's a much more powerful message. So just to cut, these are our sort of guiding principles of what we think e-learning's about. And you'll see from what I've been saying, it's very heavily informed by those expectations. It's about supporting their experience of going to work in the digital age. It's about the flexibility of access. So those students in particular, those working students, commuting students, mature students, being able to get to their learning materials at a time and a place that's convenient to them is very, very important. It's important to be able to extend the interaction. So I've got an hour of contact time, but I've then got access to my peers or to the tutors or to experts at a different point in time. That's very important. Also about authenticity. So, you know, it's important that we use those rich resources that are out there in the world, the rich electronic resources, and give them work-based activities. Work-based simulations are very popular, that they can take control on it. So lots of formative assessment. They like formative assessment more than I think is probably healthy, and they just keep testing themselves and testing themselves and testing themselves until they think they've nailed some of the questions. And also the convenience. It's very difficult to have a conversation sometimes with the faculty about the convenience that's assigned to this, because you say, well, put your contact details online, put your syllabus online, put your timetable online. That's hardly the sexiest part of e-learning. You know, it's not really embedding learning technology into my curriculum. But in actual fact, those things are so beneficial to the students that they'd actually rather have that than anything else, you know, because it's just that minimum level of entry that you're dealing with. The senior management course that we ran, they asked some questions, probably just doing a little bit of sanity check, I think. Is technology just for young people? Is what the senior manager asked. So, because we've got students who are not necessarily young, are they not going to get anything out of it? What about mature students? Are they expecting this to happen? What if you're postgraduate? What's the relationship between face-to-face? And we were able to field all those questions, not by us just saying, of course it's not for young people, we're quite old and we like it. You know, we were able to say, that the students are enjoying it and the students are expecting this information, and they're very market driven, and so that made a lot more sense to them. But again, their question is, should we be meeting it, should we be managing it, are we trying to raise the bar, are we trying to keep their, suppress their expectations? And I think that is, it's a recurrent theme, and from my perspective, we should meet as much as possible, and we should just keep trying to raise that bar. But at the same time, you don't want people coming in expecting one experience and then getting something which is slightly different. So you're constantly playing catch up. As staff develop their skills, you can then open up a new opportunity to do something else. So in terms of meeting, hopefully this ties in with what I've just said, we now deliver almost all of our feedback online. This is the plan for the year. So one faculty delivers all its grades and all its feedback online from this year, and the other three faculties that we have, which are like schools or departments, will be delivering from 09-10. The way we've designed it is actually to try and encourage students to engage with their feedback and read their written feedback. They actually have to read their written feedback and engage with that in order to release their grade. And we've built that into the technology so that they get a little bit more out of the thing that you've gone to the trouble of writing, rather than just looking and saying, I've got a 62, I know what that means. Blackboard consistency. We let all our staff, all our faculty do whatever they want in Blackboard. They can design it however they want, they can lay it out however they want, they can adopt it whenever they want to. That's great in terms of buy-in, because everybody finds their feet and move together. It's not so great if you're a student and you're moving through the different sites, because you use different terminology, it's laid out slightly differently, it's a little bit disorienting. So we've been doing some work around consistency, not standardisation. You can still change most of it, but just to try and encourage course teams to use similar sorts of terminology, or to have the same kinds of things in the same sorts of categories. The best thing, I think, about that project is getting the people together to have those conversations. That's what's been brilliant. You know, the course teams or the programme teams don't necessarily usually meet. They all go off and teach their individual modules, and they don't really feel what that's like from a student perspective. So pulling them together has been very beneficial. I realise, I appreciate that doesn't necessarily translate into a US context where people choose the whatever course they want to take, but it's been very important for us. The Digital Fluency Initiative, you soon come to the conclusion, it doesn't matter what you do with the technology, it's the people that matter. So what sort of skills, what sorts of level of confidence do staff and students have? And that's around IT skills, it's around information literacy skills, around critical thinking. It's also around online interaction skills. So how do you encourage debate online, or how do you encourage people into a discussion? What do you do if somebody's being overly social in their communication style? What's the difference between professional academic communication? Those sorts of things. And also personalising more and more of their learning. So they're translating what they experience in the social sector, and just, you know, buying an airline ticket or doing their banking or, you know, getting the library books. They expect it all to be equally personalised and easy, and so we've tried to grow on that. In terms of managing, and this is just one little bit, we encourage all our staff to have a rationale for using e-learning, which again is one of those things I think that seems absolutely obvious, and I don't know why it didn't occur to us right at the very beginning, but it did take us a little while for it to occur to us. And what we encourage is that they say, what is the purpose of e-learning within this module's context? How does it fit with everything else that you're going to do within this module? What am I expecting from you as a student? How frequently should you be using it? What kinds of activities should you be doing? And then what can you expect from me in return? So having that arrangement and making that clear does manage expectations. So students know that this module won't have any podcasts in it, but I'm really committed to discussion and I want us to be discussing and debating online. That's very clear. Also, they don't feel like they're missing something. We had some evidence that students felt quite anxious if one tutor was using a wiki and another tutor wasn't using a wiki, and they're saying, well, have I just not found it? Is there something there that I'm not identifying? So being very clear about those expectations was important. It's also a really interesting, I'd recommend it to anybody who's in faculty development, to actually get people to sit and write those things, because they're really hard to write. Everybody sort of knows why they're doing it, but it's very hard to articulate it. But once you've articulated it, the feedback we've had from faculty is they feel much more confident about what they're doing, because they can encapsulate that information. In terms of faculty support, we often get questions like, what should I be doing? I don't know. All these students, they come in, they want this, they want that. What should I be doing? What do the students expect? So we try to build the expectations work into our faculty development. So, for example, we share the expectations data. So we publish that and make that available to staff, and they can have a look at it. We break it down by faculty, because they only want the information about their discipline. They don't care what the university, what all the university students think. They just care about what the students in their particular department are working with. We introduce it into course planning materials, and we run an integrated e-learning course as well for staff. So a six-week short course for staff about how to embed e-learning within their curriculum. And we do a strand of that which is about students' expectations and changing expectations, and how you might deal with those expectations on a modular or a course level. So rather than the sort of meta activities that we're doing, what you might do within your own curriculum. Everything was going so smoothly there, wasn't it? The other thing is, we have these guides. Now, you may not be able to see these, but if anybody's interested in these, I can send you the PDFs of them. The one at the back says 11 things not to do with Blackboard. And the 11 things not to do with Blackboard came out of the experiences research that we did, the diaries and the interviews. And we said, you know, what's happening with your experience? And basically, the students tell you the things that are really not very good. And so we had that guide, which is 11 things not to do with Blackboard. We now have a sister publication, which is 11 things for enhancing your teaching using Blackboard, which is based on the expectations. So so one's about, you know, things like don't have empty areas and make sure there's an announcement and put your contact details, you know, those kinds of things that make it helpful. This one's ideas that might stretch you, so give your feedback online. Use surveys to get to know your students. Use some sort of diagnostic, for example. Use blogs. How you might use discussion. Because if you're not used to using online discussion, what's a nice entry point for you? So there are suggestions in there. So that's the study that we did and what we've done with the information from 03-08. Just talk a little bit now about where we are now, because we've just entered 08-09, and what did we do next? Because after 5 years of a survey, it can be quite tired. And we looked at the questions and we said, do we want to keep asking these questions? And what we really felt was, there is nothing that they're going to tell us this time that we don't already know. There isn't that much variation in the data that suggests that next year suddenly something's going to go through the roof. So we decided that we didn't want to repeat it as it was. And then we stepped back again and said, well, we've got this slot. We've got a slot booked when we can do a survey for all students as they're coming in. What might we want to do with that? What do we actually really want to know? And we wanted to make it more about the learning. I think it's the other one started off being about the learning, but then it got very practical. Tick these boxes. Do you use journals? Do you use websites? Do you use books? You know, it was very kind of ticky, I guess, and very, very listy. Thinking now. So what we've done is we went down from 20 questions this year to 5 questions, and they're all free text to these questions, so this is just, you know, have your opinion. So we decided to take it from a different perspective and ask, what are you most looking forward to about studying on your course this year? So we actually get people to think about what is it that they're expecting, without actually saying, what are your expectations of? What do you think could be different about what's expected of you from your previous experience, whether that's students that were entering their final year who'd had a Sheffield Hallam experience, or whether it was students that had been somewhere else or have just come from school? Is it going to be different? Describe a learning activity that you've done recently that helped you make sense of your course. And that was one of the things that I think we had some very interesting data there about how do they relate particular learning activities to the holistic learning experience that they're involved in. What skills would you like to improve to make you better? And what additional support are you looking for, particularly in terms of your study skills? So we took a slightly different perspective and we decided to ask a very wide question, or very wide questions, with the intention that we can make a lot more out of the feedback if it goes into particular areas. So if they start talking about the role of technology, they start talking about the role of authenticity, then we're able to factor that in. So what are we seeing? And bear in mind that the data's just short of 2 weeks old, so it's not been thoroughly analysed, I wouldn't say, at this stage, but this is my kind of quick straw poll. Most looking forward to authentic tasks, a work experience, a case study-based activity, something that feels like being a historian or being an engineer or being a nurse, something that's very much about that discipline. What will be different? They all think they're going to need to be more independent. The expectation is they're going to be more independent. Even the final year students are expect. So each year they're expecting the independence to kind of ratchet up in that way. Making sense is interesting. Some of that's about context. So I thought I was doing okay, and then I went away and I spoke to a practitioner, and now I understand that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But also, interestingly, online support. I had a look through all the Blackboard materials. That helped me make sense of it. I looked through the support activities or the discussion boards, and that helped me make sense of it, which, you know, was unexpected, because for such an open question, we weren't expecting... We were glad, but we didn't necessarily think we were going to get a technology-based answer. What skills are needed? Confidence, and confidence is dominant in this, and then research skills. So mostly it's about wanting to feel like you're in control of your learning activity and you know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And additional support, all sorts of additional support. You know, some students want maths help, some people want help with referencing, you know, a whole range of things. But the difference, the distinctive feature of all of them, I would say, is that it's targeted. So they either want to be able to select in to go and get some help because they've identified a need, or it's targeted to a specific strand of what they're doing. So they don't want a large orientation of here's everything that you need to know about being a student. It's much more kind of just-in-time, time-based activity. So that's what we're seeing this year. But as I say, this is not very scientific. This is me just whizzing through all the data and saying, what am I mostly seeing here? So that's what I plan to say. So I've got time for some questions, if anybody's got any questions. Excellent. No questions at all. Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, right, let me repeat the question. So that's about Blackboard consistency, and how do we actually mandate or require people to put particular information under particular headings and categorisation, and how do we get faculty not to complain about it? Firstly, we don't use the word standardisation ever, because that's not what we want, and that's a guaranteed complaint point, really. What we did was we established that the top four menu items should always be the same. And so that's, I don't know, I can't even remember. Announcements, staff information, module documents, so the actual background documents, your syllabus and your timetable, and a rationale. And then after that, you can put whatever you want into it. The way we got people not to complain is, I think there was a sense by a lot of staff that they knew it was an issue. So we were pushing against an open door to some extent. But also, the way we got them not to complain was to get them together in a room and decide what they wanted to do. So they did it through conversation. It was a very conversational approach to change. So rather than say, this is what you've got to use, and this is, we're going to lock this down, and you must do this, we said, there are different ways of doing this. Let's mimic the student experience. Let me take you through what a student sees when they're studying on the programmes that you're teaching on. And now talk amongst yourselves, really, about what you think the change ought to be. So we weren't sure how many staff would want to do this. We have about 2,500 modules on Blackboard. And in the first year, we had 1,200 modules that went through the consistency approach. So it was significantly higher than we expected. So I think that just shows that people were willing to do it, but they still talk about the conversations, because what they've ended up doing is actually introducing some more interesting things or more integrated things across the module. So you're using discussion. So sometimes in the early study, we had situations where every single module that a student studied used a discussion board. And every single tutor thought that was really interesting and exciting and new and unusual. And all the students were thinking was, oh, now I've got to go to another one, and now I've got to go to another one. It was very repetitive. So actually getting them to talk about what that blend and what that mix is was also really important to us. Okay. I'm going to repeat the question. I just want to clarify it first. Do you mean in terms of the consistency?
Yes.
Yeah.
The consistency was established by the faculty. How long was it before we saw improvement in student
success? Okay. Pretty quickly. Every spring we do a large-scale evaluation of our student portal, and one of the questions is, considering everything about your Blackboard experience, what's the one thing you'd like to change? 12 months ago or 18 months ago, it was consistency all the way through. The Faculty of Health and Wellbeing, which was one of the ones that went for it to make those changes first, they were the first ones to act on that, don't get that feedback within 12 months. So within that first year cycle, they didn't get the consistency feedback at all. The students had addressed that now, and they were seeing that it just wasn't raised as an issue. Some of the other faculties were still raising the issue, but less so. I'd like to predict that by the time we do it next year in April, that the feedback about what's the one thing you'd like to change consistency will be significantly lower. So that's how we're measuring our impact. Do you have a question? Any other questions? Okay, there's never quite a straight answer to this because no one person does e-learning all their time. Okay, so I have one member of staff who does e-learning most of their time, one member of staff that does e-assessment most of their time, and then each of the faculties has one e-learning advisor within it. So there are four e-learning advisors within the faculty, and we work with them to do the development work. And in terms of, we also have some students who do the work for us as well. So we employ some current students on a day a week to do some of the things like if a course team decided to change all their menus and they wanted them all updating, we got the student to do it. We didn't want to create the extra work for the staff. So no, we have a separate systems administrator and half a database administrator, and they're in a different department. We're in the instructional design unit, in the education development unit, so that's different. Okay. Yeah. Which one? Okay, so the question there was, based on the data that we've collected, how have we shared that with our marketing department in terms of recruitment for prospective students, and also how are we capturing those different technology uses? Is that probably the question? Okay. In a roundabout sort of way, and this is one of those things where you have to take a series of steps, when we did the course for senior managers, one of the people who was on that course was the director of marketing, who then decided it would be a really good idea for his staff to know more about e-learning so that they could talk about what's happening within the institution. So we then ran that course again for the marketing department. So they now have a much better understanding of the different types of activity that we're talking about. We're not talking about fully distance learning courses. We're not talking about just putting all your lecture slides online. We're talking about a whole range of different activities. So they now articulate that very well, I feel, in the prospectus. But it's been quite recent. It's been quite a tough one. That's a tough in, I think, to get into marketing. The other thing that they do is they give course-based examples. Because what they asked for was, could you give us an show us an illustration of what e-learning is like at Sheffield Hallam? Well, you can't, because it's different in every course and in every module. So what they now do is they give some examples of, you know, in nursing you're going to use a blog, a reflective blog, to map your professional development, for example. So they actually give those specific examples within the context of the subjects that they're promoting within the prospectus. This one first, and then I'll come to you. Okay, so the questions are, how did we survey incoming students, and was it a paper-based survey or an online survey? I'm going to answer them the other way around. It was an online survey that we used through our student portal. The incoming students we surveyed in induction week, which is the week before teaching starts. So it's, I don't know, do you have like a freshers week or some kind of orientation week? So we actually survey them at the moment during that week and the first week of teaching. We do now give access to applicants, to students, to prospective students of the university, to our student portal. And we are now seeing that we're going to start doing some of the expectation work earlier on so that we can identify their expectations and also start to give them some additional information so that by the time they actually arrive at the university, they're more equipped to address that expectation. Sorry, say your question. Okay, so the question there was, we've been trying to meet the students' expectations since 2003. Have we got any evidence that the students are doing better at the university since 2003? No. I think it's going to be the right answer, isn't it? I think it's hard to make a direct correlation. What we tend to... what we feel is that the use of the technology, when used appropriately, can make the learning experience more engaging. So if the student experience is more engaging, certainly that has a positive impact on retention, and we have specific examples of that where we had modules or courses that had high dropout rates that they've been addressed. And also, if things are more engaging and you're more engaged in your learning experience, the end product of that is that you should do better. Whether you can just say it's only that one thing that's made you do better, I don't feel you can do that. I think there are lots of different initiatives, lots of activities, lots of curriculum design that are all contributing to additional performance. But certainly in terms of the flexibility of access, making it easy for you to stay on the course, controlling your own learning, being able to see what your progress is and how you're doing on that course, and then just having that information available to you, those learning experiences that are more interesting or more authentic, makes a difference in terms of that experience, I would say. Okay. Any more questions? Got time for one more? Okay, so the question there was, have we considered doing a faculty expectations of e-learning? And the answer there is yes, we have considered it, and then considered it some more. At the moment, our priority is going to be around faculty's experiences of e-learning. The Digital Fluency Initiative that I mentioned there is for staff and for students. So it's really about how do you feel about your professional role within the world of technology? What kind of development opportunities are you looking for? Where do you see benefits? Where do you see the problems? So at the moment, because we have so many faculty who are actually using e-learning, we're focusing on their experiences of it. And that's underway at the moment. We started it in about February of this year, February 08, and it will continue through to the summer of 09. And then hopefully we'll have some information to share. Up until then, really, we took a very case study based approach to faculty experiences, tell us what you're doing, tell us what you're finding easy or difficult, whereas now we're really looking at their professional identity and their personal experiences and confidence. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.